CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Here we are, live, ready to go, pressing the buttons, starting the show, making sure that we've got everything in order for you on this Monday morning. And here, without any further ado, is the team to guide you through the first couple of hours of your day. Leanne Moll.
Let's give her a round of applause. Leanne Moll.
With one of her cats. And Mbulelo. Mbulelo Tinta. Otherwise known as MKT. And there's me. So that's it. That's the full quote this morning. Also going to be joined later on by Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who's, of course, our resident live-in shrink. He's the guy who comes and helps us get our Monday started properly. And he might just be able to do the same for you. Let's see. So that's Dr. Hanan coming up a little later on. We've also got Collector Mania this morning. And we'll be talking to someone about something pretty wild that is certainly unusual. It's not something I had any idea people were still collecting. But then, there we go. We will see when we get to that a little bit later in the show. How was the weekend?
Yeah, all good. I ran a 15K. I went on a date.
What?
And yeah, and lost four kilograms.
Nah, bullshit.
It's all going really well.
I'm gonna call bullshit on all three of those things. 15Ks, please. If you'd said five, maybe I would have said, you know.
Listen, in actual fact, I have an appointment with a hip surgeon today, so I definitely wasn't running anywhere.
Oh, my God. Old woman.
Man. I know. Old lady problems.
I'm not a woman, I'm a man.
My name's Dennis.
Well, you didn't tell me your name is Dennis. Well, you didn't ask. Oh, my God. This is how
help, help, I'm being repressed.
So I went to a farm that a friend of mine owns out near Dahlstrom, and it was beautiful. Man, that place, that part of the world is just so special, and it's especially nice when it's out of season and there aren't all the usual, you know, Joburg people there. Because it's just different to everywhere else in South Africa. It looks different. The vegetation is different. The sky is different. The clouds are different. It's just a weird place. I love it. I mean, I've never really thought about it that much, but this weekend was just beautiful. There were about, I don't know, what was it, seven of us went out to this place, and it's just lovely, man. You know, everything's so green at the moment because of all the rain that they've had. So it just looks magic. And this friend of mine called me on like Friday last week. He's like, what are you doing this weekend? So I said, well, you know, a couple of things, nothing important. He's like, can you get away? So I said, yeah, I can do whatever the hell I want. So I did. I went with them. And it was just terrific. I mean, it's like a, what, two-hour, 20-minute drive. And it's pleasant all the way because the highway's in pretty good nick, that N4 highway. You know, the toll gates, there was no delay. It's just easy. It's easy. It's 2.5 hours out of Joburg. I mean, who, you know, that's what makes this country so amazing. You travel 2.5 hours out of Johannesburg and you've got just the most incredible diversity of places you can get to in that range of 2.5 kilometers. It's phenomenal. You've got the Vaal, you've got the Northwest, you've got Limpopo, you've got Mpumalanga. You've got beautiful, beautiful places to go to. Even the Northern Free State is lovely, you know, and I just thought about it and thought, yeah, this place is pretty much paradise, South Africa. It really is. If we could just get our shit together and run it a little better, if we had better administrators, the kind that Bulelo always goes on about, these bureaucrats that just need to know how to do the right thing, fill in the right form, not steal the money. If we could get that right, yo, man, it'd be just, no one in the world would want to live anywhere else. We could charge a premium for them.
And I think it's especially true for Joburgers and Gautengers. I mean, in the Cape, you don't have to travel very far to see something absolutely spectacular. You might even just have to look out your window. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can reach such varying landscapes in a shorter amount of time.
Right.
But for us stuck in the concrete and suburban jungle,
yeah.
We forget that there's so much amazing nearby.
Well, also, you've got to do some impulsive things sometimes. I'm not impulsive at all. I'm a bit of a control freak. So unless I can have one of those rare moments where I don't take myself too seriously, where I think that I'm doing really important things, which probably some of the time I'm really not doing important stuff. Just get away. Just do it. Just say yes to stuff. And there's a bit of a lesson in that, because you miss out on really great experiences because you're like, oh, well, I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got responsibilities. No one's going to – I'm not important. It's not like everything's going to grind to a halt if I don't disappear for 2 days. I think I can do this more, and I might just do that this year. Let's see. Anyway, how was your weekend, Bulelo? You haven't given us any insight into your wicked ways. What did you do?
No, I was just listening to Leanne's perfect weekend, I was thinking, how can I one-up that? But I can't really. No, I was just training, relaxing, getting back into the swing of things. I don't know. I've planned out my year, so I want to do a couple of races like I did at the end of last year. So,
oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, you don't just get to sit on the couch for that, you know?
No, you'll have to do some work.
No, it's great.
I think that I've also realized you don't have to be a billionaire to have a really fun, happy life. I mean, I knew that already, but I mean, you don't need to have tons and tons of money. Things don't have to cost you a lot for you to enjoy them. And it sounds so obvious when you say it that way, but I think about it and I think there are so many places to go and people to see and conversations to have and experiences to have that don't actually cost you a whole lot of money. They just require you to make decisions and to follow through with things that ordinarily you'd say no to because you prioritize work or you prioritize responsibilities and all that stuff. And that's good, obviously. You need to do that. But there are also times where you got to throw caution to the wind and just go, bugger it. I'm just going to go. And I think that's part of that whole being happy thing is just being able to just drop everything and do something. Do something fun. Anyway,
you know, it's really hard, and I realize,
Bulelo, I just want to throw this in. Kwazinati says, Free State is not that great, Mr. Cliff. Okay. not a fan of the Free State. Yeah. Thanks, Kwazinati. Sorry about that. I'll take it back. Then the Free State's shit. Sorry. Forgive me for what I said. Yes? Bulelo, you were saying?
No, it's just really difficult to have quality experiences because people don't know how to, and you absolutely love it when I say be where your feet are, but people don't know how to have quality experiences because whenever they're at work, their mind's at home. When they're on holiday, their mind's at home.
Right.
And it takes a bit of a discipline to have a good time, if you know what I mean, which sounds like an oxymoron, but you have to be able to enjoy what you're doing without worrying about, I don't know what people worry about. I don't really have much to worry about in my life. You know what I mean?
Be present is what you're saying, and I get that because there's nothing worse.
Tough.
I see people in amazing places. Like, I'm going to Cape Town this week. I've got some work to do there on Thursday morning, but we'll be doing the show, and I can do it from anywhere, right? So I'm going to head off to Cape Town, but I know there are going to be people sitting at beautiful restaurants or in magnificent surroundings or on a beach or wherever they might be in a place like Cape Town, and they'll be on their phones the whole time. And you think, really, you would rather be watching some boring asshole on Instagram than taking in all of this around you? That drives me insane. And we do. We're not present in the stuff that we've... Now, you sacrifice how many hours in the office. You work your backside off. You try and bring home the bacon so you can have a week or two's holiday at the end of the year, which many people already had now. And they've got to wait another 11 months for the next one, right? And then they get there and they spend their time on their phone. What a horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
I was watching a clip on one of these talk shows. I can't remember which one. Remember the actor from New Girl, the Jewish guy? And he was talking about an experience that he had recently where he was at a dance party and Prince was DJing. Obviously not that recently, not like last week.
He's dead.
And Prince was DJing and he was standing up there with a whole lot of celebrities and all of the celebrities were kind of using their phones to film and, you know, film Prince and film the crowds. And he just took a moment to stop and be absolutely in the moment.
Yeah.
And be present. And think to himself, I'm dancing next to Prince DJing on stage. And he had this like out of body experience. And he thought to himself, you know what, I'm going to dance like no one's watching. And he said, I finally danced like me, what was inside me. And I just loved the moment. And at one point I looked up and Prince and I made eye contact.
Wow.
And he knew and I knew that we were having this moment.
Wow. Jesus,
we don't do
amazing.
That. We're so busy Googling stuff as we're talking and, you know.
I couldn't agree more.
Like the close, for all my close friends, right, is for me now I have to micromanage people. Otherwise, it's a waste of my time. It's not for them. It's like if we come to lunch, I expect you to leave your phone in your car or have it off.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to go home. But I address that early now. If you're very close to me, if you're like somebody I'm seeing,
you only have about three people who are close to you because you have so many rules. It's impossible to keep up with the Mbulelo rules, you know?
We're talking about quality here, right? I'm not trying to be friends with every Tom, Dick, and Harry. This isn't Facebook. It's my real life. But it's an important thing what Leanne's saying is that, like for me, that's the thing where the quality of my experience is determined by, are you here or not? Because I can text you from home. You know what I mean?
Right.
If somebody's on your phone, that's really important. Like, I've also got stuff to do.
Right.
Like, I've got a quality experience where I could be elsewhere. I could be training. I could be reading a book, you know? There's a discipline to having a good time, which sucks for most people because they don't really want to be that person to tell someone, hey, you're wasting my time or whatever it takes to get to that bliss, you know?
And
it's not easy.
And make an excuse for occasionally doing stuff. You know, last week something happened. I had an appointment. I thought I had an appointment on Wednesday. I pretty much went in to the office 3-4 days of last week, and I'm trying to make that 2 and then eventually 3. But the reason was, like on Wednesday, I thought I had an appointment with somebody at 1. And I got there, and they said, no, your appointment is next week. And normally I'd be like, oh, damn it, now I've wasted the whole day. I got in the car and blah, 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 blah. And instead I was like, well, okay, I'm going to maybe go and see this other person who I haven't seen for a while. So I called her up and said, what are you doing? She said, no, nothing. So we went and had a quick lunch. I was like, that was a better day than any other day last week. And it was a last-minute thing. And I don't think that's difficult for us to do. It's like, so you're meeting, I'm so important that my 1 o'clock doesn't, you know, is not ready for me or whatever. Now I'm going to sit and sulk about how I drove all the way to something. What a stupid attitude to have. Can you imagine all those people lying in hospital beds going, well, you know, if they canceled that 1 o'clock of mine, I would have had that time. No, they
No, instead you're remembering things like, I've just had a flashback now of being 21 and an intern at the SABC.
Yeah.
And when we finished up on the Friday at 4 o'clock, four of us girls decided, let's just drive to Durban right now.
Awesome. Yeah, you
and
see.
We got into, we all bundled into my little city shuttle, the four of us. And I phoned my mom and said, I won't be coming home. And we went to Durban for 2 nights with the clothes on our back. And we met these amazing people and had these house parties, and it was just so awesome.
Yeah, I think we got to all just make an effort this year to do more of that stuff. Anyway, I see lots of things going on in the news. I was kind of sad to see Ronnie Spector had died last week. Now, a lot of people don't know who Ronnie Spector is, but she was a pretty amazing singer. She's married to Phil Spector, who was the crazy man who started the Wall of Sound. And, you know, he was this extraordinarily talented producer who kind of changed the way that music sounded. And her most famous song was probably Be My Baby, which was on the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. That's what kind of propelled it to modern fame and glory for most people, but she was huge in the 60s. She was like this incredibly talented singer, and she was sexy and she was lovely, and she had this famous love affair, although she never knew about it because it was he was so painfully shy. He didn't know how to even approach her and tell her that he loved her. But Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys was head over heels in love with this girl, and he wrote "Don't Worry, Baby" as a reply to her "Be My Baby." And if you, I think I've told you about this before, if you play the two over each other in your head, if you sing the chorus of the one while the verse of the other is playing, they just, it's a perfect
mashup.
Overlap, yeah. And the kind of talent that's involved in being able to do that with music is just, to me, that is, that's like a godly power, right? That's like a, to be able to write music is still the one thing that I look up to more than anything else. Because she didn't write "Be My Baby," but he did write "Don't Worry, Baby," and he wrote it because he just couldn't walk up to her and say, "I'm in love with you." And when I heard that she died last week, I mean, she's kind of old now. She was a big singer in the 60s, so, you know, time had been a ticking. But I just thought, oh, there goes another love song, you know. I kind of, one of those love songs is now a legend. The person involved is no longer here to reply. And I wondered, suddenly in that moment, how did Brian Wilson feel when he got that news? Because obviously they never got together, right? She'd by then married Ronnie, and he'd obviously he'd started becoming famous too, and in fact he was very famous in the 60s. And I know that they ended up on stage together once singing, and he just looked like a schoolboy who was like, he saw the love of his life for the first time. And I mean, they were both old and drug addled by that stage, neither of them at all attractive to anyone. I think that they probably chase away, you know, mangy street dogs. But but I looked at the video of them. You can look it up on YouTube. You can see it where she actually sings "Don't Worry, Baby" with him, and he's just like, he's fumbling and he's nervous and can't believe he's on stage with this girl so many years later. They must have eventually spoken about it. But I wondered in that moment when I heard that she died, I wonder if, you know, Brian Wilson was like, oh, there's the one that got away.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. We don't know how many people are walking around as these living, tragic, romantic
things. Oh, man. Unrequited where love.
Where they're in their 90s. And it's so weird because I saw a TikTok just yesterday of a woman who was in her 90s. And she's pointing to these black and white photos with her wrinkled and aged fingers and pointing out the love of her life, who she remembered from college, and how they never, due to different circumstances, were able to get together.
Yeah.
And how it's still her biggest regret. She's lived with that all her life.
I often hear people saying, yeah, I regret this and I regret that. But someone once said to me, and it's always just rung like a church bell in my head, you always regret the things you didn't do, not the things you did. No matter how bad the things that you ended up doing that might have been stupid and taken your life in a bad direction. But I just listening to your story now, Leanne, imagine not doing something and being on your deathbed one day and going, oh, that was the thing I should have just done. See, that's the kind of regret you don't want.
But are people, in this sense, is it, you know, the romance of somebody is always better than what they actually are. You know, when you get into the love of you. So it's almost better to live that out, that fantasy, than the real person. Because people are people. They leave socks on the floor eventually.
Yeah, so what
like
are you
just at their house.
So you're telling me.
You know what I mean?
You're telling me you'd rather just forego the potentially amazing thing that could happen, even if it's fleeting?
No. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying
well,
that
fucking
it's
explain
more
yourself because you got me confused.
No, what I'm saying is the fantasy that people tell you of that is better than an unrequited love, because in order for love to be unrequited, you have to declare it. You know, if you just like these people who live alongside their loved one and imagine how great they must be in private or whatever, it's a better image than what it would actually be and makes for a better story.
But so what?
Than if you got with them.
So what? You build up the fantasy so much in your head sometimes that if you don't actually experience what it's going to be like, you'll just live in that fantasy forever, and that can be just as crippling, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I see both points, and I see that it can actually be harmful to remember a bad relationship in a good way, where you kind of idealize it and say, you know, it could have been so much better and we could have worked through it. But all you're remembering is the good parts of it. And that can be harmful because it would take a few hours of being back in that relationship to realize it was a mistake.
Well, you just made me think of a friend of mine, and she's always had this thing for a certain guy. She was kind of interested in him for a very long time. And then he had, you know, another girlfriend, and they kind of never got together. And she eventually gave up on the dream. Okay. And then somewhere about, you know, 3 years down the line, they both ended up single and with each other at some party or something. And you could just see that they allowed themselves to be honest with each other. And like, you could see this spark like suddenly ignite. And I was like, it makes me happy, man. It wasn't my relationship. I didn't get anything out of it. They were both okay before that, to Bolelo's point about like, you don't have to, you know, make the fantasy a reality. I think you do. I think you've got to take those chances. There's going to be some pain. There's going to be some heartache. Some things are not going to live up to your expectations. And if things did live up to your expectations every time, you'd be so realistic that you'd never dream. There's got to be a little bit of give and take. And I don't know whether, you know, your wildest dreams of being with person X or doing something here or, you know, having some kind of an experience or some goal that you can achieve. I don't know if that stuff ever lives 100% up to your expectations, but a healthy person must have a fair amount to dream for, and at least some of those dreams have got to partly come true. And you'll only be able to live that kind of life if you take a chance. So if you wake up this Monday morning and there's someone that you want to fix something with, or there's someone you want to give a chance, or there's some kind of thing you want to chase down, for God's sake, don't sit here next Monday and say you're still there. Because I have less respect for people who won't gamble a little bit than I do for those who lose.
Having said what you've said, a friend of mine did exactly what you're saying. So somebody I've been friends with, late primary school, I met them.
Yeah.
And he woke up one day, like, dropped me a WhatsApp, and he's like, what the hell am I doing? I should have been with this girl. Well, they haven't spoken since October.
So
after he let her know, dynamic. Yeah, now things are so
awkward. Orkies. So Carl says, have we lost our minds? We're taking love advice from fucking Mbolelo now? Wow. I don't know why, because I'm not romantic at all, but I do love those movies with unrequited love in them. It just gives me such a thrill. I don't know what, you know, maybe there is some part of my life that I'm trying to avoid, or I'm pretending isn't there. But I love those movies where it's a romance, but one of them never really has it come true, you know, or both of them don't have it come true. I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is that Remains of the Day, which is just the sad, sad story about.
Oh, my gosh, Gareth.
Jesus, what a movie. Anyway.
Remains of the Day, what a classic.
It's the greatest, right? And I watch that movie and I'm like, oh, I keep watching it hoping that these two kind of boring people, because they're not interesting people. It's the butler and the housekeeper. And they're not, you know, they both end up having these very average existences where they're constantly doing things for other people, and their own hearts are never fulfilled. And I keep watching the movie going, maybe if I watch it this 18th time, the story will be different. It's so ridiculous, right? Anyway.
It's very true of yourself, though. I mean, you're one who loves the Charles and Camilla story, for instance, with them having been in love all their lives and then finally getting together.
Yeah, I'm not an idiot like all of you romantics. I see it for what it is. And also, you know, I can look at other people and I can see it crystal clear. And then they say, oh, but what you just said is so true about our relationship. And I go, yeah, but it's easy for me to observe from the outside, right? and to be objective about your situation. Buletta, why did you break up with that girl or whatever? She was perfect for you. I can see it, and I'll explain it to you, and you'll go, wow, that makes sense. And then they always go, but what about you? Haven't you found someone? And I said, I have to explain. I go, part of the reason I can see what's going on with you is that I'm not looking for the same thing as you. So I can afford to be objective about it because I don't have this gap in my soul that I'm trying to fill like you are. I can see why you're after that person. I can see why you are sad about this or you want that. Because I don't have to see empathy. This whole idea of empathizing with people is totally overrated. Because it means putting yourself in their position. It means having some understanding of their experience, which I'm not good at. Because I think that no one can really ever be in someone else's shoes. And as a result of that, I don't try to empathize. I try to understand. It's better to understand than to empathize. Because the minute you're in the realm of feelings...
Yeah, it's more helpful.
Well, the minute you're in the realm of feelings, who really gives a shit what I feel about what you feel? That doesn't help anybody. It doesn't get us anywhere. But if I can look at it and try to objectively reason it out and understand what I see happening, rather than empathize, I might actually be more useful. All right, so some people here are talking about this. Robin says, I had a smoking hot boyfriend who used to say relationships going south. Never lose your dignity on unrequited love. The lasting dignity plan. Wow. Maybe. No.
For only one rand a day.
I saw Desmond Dube, who we had on the show last year, remember? I saw him in some new horrible ad for an insurance company. And it really is horrible. It's like he pops up as the doctor, then he's the patient on the table. I was like, wow, I really hope they're paying him a lot of money for that ad because he's a very talented guy and I like Desmond Dube a lot. And, you know, some people say he's sold out, but, oh, that's a horrible ad. I looked at it, I was like,
I feel so awkward when you say things like that.
So shit. It's a shit ad.
I'm dying for the brand. I'm dying for him.
Well, that's it. The brand and him, they're talking about, like, having lasting dignity. Meanwhile, everyone I see on the screen has completely given up their dignity for insurance money. what the hell is this? Oh, man. Anyway. All right. So lots of other things going on, and we'd like to hear from you this morning. Dude 69, being very realistic, says, is it romantic when the woman you're stumping just sits there and stares at you while you're in a deep sleep? Well, either it's romantic or it's psychotic. You know, she could be planning to murder you in your sleep. That's why she's watching you, to like pick up on when should the knife go in or when should the pillow go over you. Or she's desperately in love with you. I think sometimes when people are so in love that they actually are completely distracted, I think that becomes very dangerous. There are some of those people who are like TikTok into madness. You know, it's just around the corner.
Yeah, where you start losing yourself, parts of yourself.
And you think that if you don't have that person in your life, your life is worthless. Those people start causing huge trouble for everyone around them and themselves. Anyway, I was looking at this. Onto practical issues. I need to get a new phone cover. This thing is falling apart. And if I drop my phone with this cover on one more time, it's finished. I think I'm going to have to go and get a new one. I'm going to get one of those loud, rude, stupid phone covers, I think. Everyone has a black phone cover like this, though. And then you never know when people's phones are all on the table which one is yours until you press the screen. I'm going to get a loud cover so I know which one is mine before I have to press the screen. There we go.
You do it.
There's something useful for the morning. We're talking a whole lot of shit now about love and, you know. Now, finally, some practical advice for this morning.
Cell phone covers.
Yeah.
So much more important than love.
Right. Can you all stick to what you know best and leave the rest to Dr. Hanan? Yeah, all right. Okay, good point. Elson says, hey, Gareth, sorry for being so random. Did you hear about the Instagram model that is suing Drake for putting hot sauce in the condom after they had sex?
Ooh.
I thought that was a bullshit story. I saw that story, but I didn't believe it.
This got introduced to me by some...
the condom after they had sex.
Yeah, apparently it's got its uses, but this got introduced to me by some of the guys I work with, and it's a whole new world. This Drake, so Drake had a child with a stripper as well, something I'd recently found out, or a like, what is going on in these people's lives? And Drake's just like a middle-class Canadian Jewish guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's researching, he's trying too hard now. He's doing too much. My man's doing too much. Awesome. You're a pop icon.
I think there's huge pressure. We all think that once you're a star, you've made it. But I think that what happens when you become very famous and very powerful and very rich, and your friends are all famous and powerful and rich, you have to keep impressing them. So you have to do even more outrageous and outlandish things. So, you know, if you're a big Hollywood star or you're a big rapper or whatever, if you're not doing wacky, wacky stuff that keeps them talking about you, you kind of become irrelevant. So there's huge pressure on those people to keep on doing crazy things like having children with strippers and putting themselves in, you know, life and death situations. Otherwise, no one cares anymore.
Which is why Richard Gere is the perfect level of fame, right? I've always said he's the perfect level of fame. He gets Hollywood money, but I think I told you this before. But
Does he still get Hollywood money? When last was he in a movie?
Still? Come on, he's Richard Gere. Okay. Gareth, don't play around. He's Richard Gere.
All right.
He puts a cap on. He's just a white guy. You know what I mean? Like, we were in Cape Town having a pizza, everyone walking past.
They don't notice him.
No one even knew it was Richard Gere. And he's getting $30 million a year.
Okay, I got you. I think there's a sweet spot. You're probably right. I don't know if Richard Gere's that sweet spot, but okay. Why the hell not? I'm not going to sit here and come up with a better example on a Monday morning. But yeah, all right, Richard Gere. He puts on a cap and sunglasses, and he's just a guy in the crowd.
Just a white guy.
Right.
Just a white guy.
Yeah. All right, some news. Novak Djokovic has been deported from Australia. I know you've got some things to say about this, Mbulelo, so go ahead.
Excellent. He's a dickhead.
I've been dying to hear your opinion, actually.
He's an absolute dickhead, and I've thought this since the beginning. And I think everybody's a dickhead who only cares about their individual rights. I've always said this, is that, and I'm an individualist, but at some point your individual rights rub up against the society. And I'm big on Australia saying, we don't care, because I love winning. And what Australia is doing in the world right now is winning. You're welcome to be yourself,
just not here. What are they winning?
Australia's in the top five place in the world to live. Forget the furor on Twitter.
Are you kidding?
Everybody, I don't see people leaving Australia. I don't see people leaving Australia.
Hello, this is the Victoria.
People want to live in Australia.
This is the Victoria Police. We're here to check that everyone in your house is actually resident here. If they're not resident here, we're going to lock you up in the police cells for the night because COVID's the most scary thing that's ever happened to us, and now we're not going to let you live your life. Oh, please. Oh, please. You think that's a good... Here's the story. And the authorities in the court documents admitted this. So let's be unequivocally clear about this. Novak Djokovic actually didn't break any rules. There was no determined issue with his paperwork or exemption, which was valid. That is all in the court documents from the Australian authorities' side. He was deported for one reason and one reason only. The government didn't like his public opinions. That is it. Now, if I lived in a country, or if I went to a country, I visited a country, and they deported me because they didn't like my opinions, then that country loses the right to tell me that they're a free country. Anywhere where you cannot express your opinions, even if some terrified little paranoid nutcases in the bureaucracy think that you're spreading misinformation or disinformation, that's not a free country. So I'm sorry, I'm not on your side on this one.
Excellent. I want to see how many people leave Australia once everyone's free. It's still one of the best places in the world to live because they act like this. Like this freedom doesn't come for free. The idea that Australia needs to pander to every prick who comes in there and it gives you the bliss. Come live in South Africa and see how that works out.
Let's just be clear again. You don't like Novak Djokovic. You disliked him before this incident.
The behavior. I mean, I've disliked his behavior before this incident.
So this is a personal gripe you have over his behavior.
No. Because I'm like this with everyone with this behavior. So it's not just Novak. It's because I don't care. He's the greatest tennis player of all time. I don't like the behavior. I hate people who are all about me, and never take the consequences. See, I don't mind Novak saying me, but there are consequences, and there's something called extreme ownership in life. Live with all the consequences. Be the hero you want to be.
Yeah.
If Australia kick you out, live with it.
I saw a comment, and then we'll leave this alone. There are other headlines. And frankly, the only person who's affected by this is Novak Djokovic. His
dad.
His leaving Australia does nothing for Australia. It only hurts his chance at prize money. So the fact that we're all excited about this or talking about it as if it's a life and death thing for us is ridiculous. But I did see this. Unbelievably, one of Australia's government's lawyers' main arguments was this. Listen to these words. They were worried that Djokovic may become an icon of free choice. Those were their exact words used. Imagine your argument against someone is they might become an icon of free choice, and that's a problem. This is not a serious country anymore. They are not a serious country anymore. If you say the problem with this person is they might become an icon of free choice, I don't understand how your priorities work. I can't take you seriously. I've never been to Australia. Don't think I'm going to go, ever. I can live my entire life without having to go there now because I'm so put off by this fucking stupid country. Anyway, let's leave it alone. You don't have to agree. You might be one of those people who thinks it's all about public health and safety. Well, you're also going to be one of those people who has to accept the science that you're going to get Omicron. No government can protect you. It's coming for you. I can't wait. Because once you get it, you're going to go, well, that wasn't so bad, because it isn't. I mean, Alec Baldwin's killed more people than Omicron. Let's move on. It's true. It's absolutely fucking true.
Allegedly. Allegedly. He didn't know about the gun, he said.
I'm not sure. Yeah, he didn't know. He doesn't know how guns work, but he's constantly mouthing off about how bad guns are. Well, you've got one in your hand, Alec. Now's your chance to... Oh, you killed the person. Good move. Anyway, the Motti family has rubbished reports that they applied for an interdict against the police. You remember this is it's turning into like another storm in not so small a teacup because these kids were abducted. They were kidnapped, held for ransom last year. And the family have broken their silence following their sudden departure to Dubai. In a statement, they rubbished reports that they have applied for an interdict against the police. Earlier this month, the police confirmed that investigations into the Motti brothers' kidnapping had hit a snag. It was widely reported that their father had obtained an interdict, preventing the brothers from speaking to the police. They have denied this. They also thanked the public for their support. So who's lying to us here? I didn't see the police. The police didn't rush to say, yes, that's actually true. There wasn't an interdict. Either there was an interdict or there wasn't. These things should have a paper trail. Let's find out who lied. And if it's these goddamn news organizations that are lying again, what are they doing? Are they trying their absolute best to kneecap themselves from a credibility point of view? You're already at the level of dirt if you're a mainstream news organization at the moment. No one trusts most of the news outlets in South Africa. No one. So how could you take the chance of spreading false information if that is what you've been doing? And if it's the Motti's lying, then prove that by showing us the interdict. There's a way to prove this. We don't have to sit with opinions. We can actually see facts. Anyway, and Lindiwe Sisulu, she can't shut her mouth. She is just all over the news. She is talking. She's responding to her open letters, you know, by the Minister of Justice. She criticized the Constitution and the judiciary. And someone brought this up to me over the weekend, and I thought it was a good point. What if Lindiwe Sisulu, after all the judges in the country pretty much put out this open letter, said why the judiciary shouldn't have an opinion on anything except their cases before them? No one cares about what a judge thinks about politicians. But now, if she has to go to court for something, what are the chances she's going to get a fair trial? Right? As much as she may be talking shit, and she may be a stupid ANC RET faction member, and she is all of those things. But she's still entitled to a free and fair appearance in front of an objective judge, if that comes down to it. What judge is going to give her a free and fair trial, you know, after what she's said now? And they've all written this open letter. Why are judges expressing opinions about politicians? Judges? Think about your cases. We don't want to hear from you on anything political. Politicians, talk all the shit you like. You're just trying to get votes. The two should not, never the twain shall mix. Why is this complicated? Judges writing open letters. Do you want to hear from judges?
No.
No.
No, 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 no.
It's part of them having some respect from us is because we know they're serious people who don't get their hands dirty with politics. That's why we want judges. Separation of powers. Judiciary, executive, legislature. They mustn't do things with each other. It's like incest. Okay? Really. They hand over stuff. So the legislature says, here we go, judiciary. Here's a bunch of rules and laws we've made. Apply them. The judiciary says, cool, we'll apply them. We have no opinion on what you did there. Because, I mean, look, lots of things have been legal in the past. Doesn't mean they were right. They were legal because the legislature of the day said, black people must live here, white people must live there. It was Group Areas Act. It was law. The judges, you don't need to be an activist judge. Just apply the law. In those days, that was a horrible law, but you had to apply the law as a judge. It doesn't make you a bad person. You're just doing what a judge is meant to do. And then the executive comes in and they say, fine, we will execute the findings of a court and we will apply the laws of the judiciary, of the legislature. Keep it clean, people. Oy, oy, oy. All right. What else do we have here? You want some more? We're on a bit of a roll this morning. I'm on a bit of a rampage.
Yeah, go for it.
Now, I know this is your favorite story, Leanne. I want to rush through it quickly because we've got Dr. Hanan coming on in a moment. Britney Spears says her family treated her worse than a death row inmate.
Tell them, Britney.
Listen, you guys think I'm interested in all of this. You guys are more interested in it than I am, just to let you know.
I don't have an opinion. Like, I just can't believe Britney Spears knows what death row is like. I don't think Britney Spears even has ever read a book longer than a couple of pages and mostly that isn't printed on cardboard. I don't believe her when she says her family treated her worse than a death row inmate. Imagine you're a death row inmate and you hear that this pop princess bimbo is busy comparing the fact that you're marching to your death, because that's what death row is, Britney, to having no control of your finances and being kept away from your family because they see you or a chocolate fireplace. How does this work? Right?
Yeah, it's weird.
There, it's weird. Sorry, turns out I do have an opinion on this.
Yeah, there we go.
Anyway. All right, that's about it.
I just like saying I told you so. So I can't wait for it to go the way it's going to go.
Oh, meltdown.
And it's going to be all... And Brittany's talking about having another baby. Uh-huh. At what point do we have to say, again... linking it to the Novak thing, like, some people have to be protected from themselves. I'm not a proponent of people doing what they want. Britney shouldn't have a baby. This is crazy.
There, like,
what are we doing?
I'm with you there, but let's see what happens. It's going to be fun to watch, right? Let's see the meltdown.
Excellent.
All right. Let's get over to Dr. Hanan, who's specially made time for us this morning, as he does every Monday, so he could be our resident shrink. And we're going to speak to him. It's going to be okay. That's how we start our Monday. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how's it?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys.
So Doc, we've got a quite serious thing that we want to put out there this morning. And I'm not even sure how to start this properly, but Mandla basically wrote a suicide note, and he sent that suicide note to us, and he didn't go and kill himself because he's also here. Hey, Mandla, but we got to talk about this.
Hello, Zakaris.
Nice to see you, man.
Thank you so much, Zakaris.
Yeah, first of all, well done on not following through on the suicide note. I'm kind of pleased about that. I'll tell you that up front.
Well, it was difficult. It was an easy one, but I also thank God that I'm here today. Excuse me, where I am. You see, I'm still traveling to an office. So.
That's all right. Don't worry about that. We're happy to have you on.
Okay.
All right, Samanda, tell me about what happened
Thank
here.
You.
Tell us all what happened here and what led to you writing this suicide note. And then we can get Dr. Hanan to...
I was just going through a very difficult time. It was the very darkest time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I don't know how to explain it, but everything that I was touching was not just working out the way I wanted to.
Right.
So eventually I felt that I can't take it anymore. So that's when the suicidal thought started to kick in, and then that's how the suicide was born. But miraculously, I survived. And after surviving, that's when I decided that, okay, let me just raise awareness against such things. Then the suicide that I wrote, it was turned to a poem. So that's why it ended up in your email.
You mind if I read a little bit of it?
Yeah, no problem. You can go ahead.
Okay, so it says, my suicide note, to whom it may concern. I find it not so hard to write this letter. By the time you find it, I will be long gone. Yes, my broken soul will be long gone. Only my scattered body you will find, no tears in my eyes. I've cried all my tears, no blood in my wounds. I have blood inside with a smile on my face, trying to be strong. And then you carry on. You basically, this is like a, it's your swan song. And
yes, I was trying to explain how I felt at that time, because that's how I felt. Because when it comes to depression, no one really understands what you are going through. Everyone just expects you to be okay. So when I said I cried all my tears with a smile in my face, it's because I had to pretend that I'm okay to everyone who was around me. Because every time that I tried to explain to them, no one could understand what was going on. So that's why I said, with a smile in my face, I have to act like I'm okay.
So Dr. Hanan, let's just bring you in here, because this is where, you know, you can shed some light and explain what you think is going on here. You've seen the whole suicide note. Here's Mandla. He's fortunately with us. I mean, where do we begin with something like this?
So his story actually reminds me of a great story that I tell a lot of my patients. There's a guy by the name of P.T. Barnum, Phineas Taylor Barnum. And Phineas Taylor Barnum ran a very successful circus called The Greatest Show on Earth. And he was known as The Greatest Showman. And there was actually a movie about him. I haven't seen it, but apparently it's excellent. And his shtick, his magic, was that he used to invite members of the audience up on stage. And within 5 seconds of meeting them, he would tell them deep secrets about their nature. Mm-hmm. And they were blown away. They were like, how do you know this? I've never shared this with anyone. And he has never met them, but he would tell them things that they had never shared or told anyone in many, 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 many years. Only they knew it. And P.T. Barnum's shtick was that, and now we call it the Barnum effect or Barnum statement, is that he would give people generalized enough statements about their world that they would see a way to personalize it specifically for them. So, for example, a Barnum statement would be, you wear a mask in public. Mm-hmm. Now, you know who else that applies to?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You have a need to be liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know who that applies to?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Everyone. You're a thinker. You're a thinker. You know that applies to?
Everyone.
Everyone. You don't get people that don't think, right?
Right.
We might think so, but we don't. So those are bottoms. I mean, you turn to somebody and go, you're a thinker. People are like, how do you know that? Who told you? Or you have a need to be needed. You have a need to be liked. And people are like, how do you know that about me? I don't try to show it, but how do you know that you've never met me? Now, by the way, people that don't have a need to be needed or don't have a need to be liked, those are people that we send away to prison. They're not welcome in our social circle. So everybody that's around us, mm-hmm, that's socially functional has a need to be needed. Now, why am I telling you this? Is because when you turn to somebody and say or think to yourself, you know, you get sad sometimes. You know that applies to
everyone.
And the truth is, people that suffer from depression or anxiety or insecurity or guilt or frustration or anger or whatever it is, they have such great shame in sharing it because they think it only applies to them. But in reality, everybody can relate to feeling sad. Everybody can relate to feeling anxious. Everybody can relate to feeling insecure. Everybody can relate to feeling not good enough at some point in their lives. And I think the first point of protocol when dealing with your own feelings is to acknowledge that what you're feeling is normal. And whilst other people might not share it because of social embarrassment, perhaps they don't want other people to know because they will be judged by social media, by their social circle, the first step is to acknowledge. Now, I want to say this to you. Do not share it with people that are going to judge you, because there are many people that are going to judge you. And many people are going to play the game of like, oh, shame, you feel sad. No, I don't feel that. But I want you to share it with the people that I acknowledge and are going to calibrate what you're feeling. I want to share another analogy with you, which might be really helpful. You know, pilots, my brother's a pilot. Pilots are trained, I don't know if I shared this before, but pilots are trained to never trust their feelings when they're flying because their feelings could lie to them. So pilots are trained to trust their instruments. So if their feelings tell them that they're veering right, but the instruments tell them they're veering left, well, that's what they trust, they're veering left. If their feelings tell them that they're straight, but the instruments say they're upside down, they trust the instrument, they're upside down. Now, we all need to be calibrated through others. But the mistake that people make is they either get calibrated by themselves, so I want to calibrate myself and figure it out myself, which is obviously wrong, or they get calibrated by instruments, by people that are unhealthy, people that gaslight them. So what I want to tell you is at least the first step is to acknowledge what you're feeling. That's perfectly appropriate and perfectly acceptable, but go and seek out the instruments and the people that will calibrate you or that will acknowledge and that will hear you and understand you, not hold you there, but understand you and push you forward in the right way. That's at least the first step.
So,
makes sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So mandala, let's just talk about mandala's specific situation here because it may also be a blueprint for a whole lot of other people who are going through this. We know we've got huge suicide rates all over the world at the moment. A lot of people feeling very isolated after COVID and all that stuff. But also in South Africa, we've got a lot of young men who feel like, you know, they're not enough. They feel like they aren't doing enough. They feel like they're being judged. They won't amount to anything, whatever the case may be. There are a lot of we know suicide is a big problem, right, Dr. Hanan? So Mandla's he's not unique in this respect, and maybe by helping him with his situation, we can help other people.
Right. So what we want to also tap to, Mandla, is I want to hear from you. How did you find that hope? Because obviously you went through that low and life is meaningless, life is purposeless. But how did you find that click, that thing that made you go, you know what? Maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe there's hope for me. Maybe there's something that I should reach out to as opposed to give it all up. What did you tap into?
Okay. I think for me, it was through my background of working as a health worker. Because at some point I was working in a clinic. So I was working mostly with HIV and AIDS patients, most of the chronic diseases. So I knew that a certain... if you are infected with certain diseases, you can also suffer depression. So when I was starting to pick up the sign that something was wrong with me, I could realize that this might mean that I have depression. So when I started to seek help, I knew exactly what was going on. So basically what became difficult was the service that I got from the public health service, which is what I ended up writing a letter to the Minister of Health, Dr. Zwelin Mkhize, trying to reach out to me. When you go to the clinic, the people who are supposed to help you, like the nurses and all the stuff, they do not know much about mental health. Do you understand? So I think what gave me hope was my background in health, knowing that there is help for people who might have what I think I have, because I first had to diagnose myself first before I was even diagnosed.
Amazing. You know what? Like a couple of things. Number one, life is filled with suffering. There's no question. We can't get away from it. Life is challenging. Life is tough. You know, the moment you think that it's just a Disney movie, well, you're just going to be disappointed. You can't get away from the fact that pain, emotional pain is there and suffering is going to be there and loss is going to be there. That's part of life. It really is how you manage it and how you deal with it. Now, you tapped into something bigger than you, and the name of this show is It's Going to Be Okay. And you tapped into that human spirit that's able to project forward and go, it's actually going to be okay. And I'm going to find a way to make it okay. I'm going to find a way to deal with this. I'm going to find a way and the people around me that will help support and guide and take care of this and help me overcome this. Not pull me out, but certainly help me find a better place. So big ups to you for having that, we call it an unconditional attitude of strength, an attitude that it's going to be okay, and you found that. I really feel it's so important, and it is in the human spirit, to look for that thing that's going to make this okay. We don't want to accept the reality of what it is. We want to acknowledge that this can be better. And well done for doing that. That's great. You tapped into your human spirit. Well done to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that you're in the position you're in now where you can look at this in such a sage, sober way, Mandla. And obviously, you know, to me, it's just important. Yeah. I didn't want to lose one more listener. I mean, I'm totally selfish about this. But I will say also it's been really fun to kind of be on your morning commute with you this morning. We were in the taxi with you. You got out. You took a little walk. We've got into
the
office.
Yeah, you travel with me. Now you are in the office door. The office is still locked, so you're outside the office now.
Nice, dude. No, listen, keep up the good work. And being in the healthcare sector, as you said you are, you guys have obviously had a very busy 2 years. Thank goodness for people like you.
Yes.
Keeping those facilities open and looking after other people. I'm very glad that you're also brave enough to share your story without worrying about being judged here. It's very, very difficult to do that, right?
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thanks, Mandla. Nice to have you on. Yeah. Wow. That's brave, huh?
I'm telling you, Gareth, you know, just to come on and share the story with such grace and bravery is incredible. Like, he's clearly has accepted what he's had and he's clearly overcome it. So that's really great. But listen, not to say that he's not going to have more ups and more downs, but he clearly holds the right attitude that it's going to be okay. That's excellent. That's really, really good.
Well, that's why we're trying to do this. You want to say something?
When I first heard him, the reason why he was coming on, I was so surprised to see his camera turn on. I wasn't expecting that. And it's that has been the most effective through his message and through us speaking to him. That has made the biggest difference to everything.
Yeah, and I mean, you could see.
Anonymous.
Yeah, for sure. But you can see he's owned it. You can see he's owned it.
Yeah.
He's like, this is what I've been through. This is what I went through. This is where I am. I've overcome it. He's owned it. He's owned it. That's great. That's wonderful.
Love it.
Listen, just by the way, if you are having trouble with suicidal thoughts, you're not managing, you're not coping with this opening of a brand new year. There are lots of people who are not. You're not the only one, as Dr. Hanan said. I love that P.T. Barnum story. And the one about the pilots and the instruments, frankly, because we sometimes have very faulty instruments.
Absolutely.
You know, we need to trust our gut less, actually, not more.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting that, you know, there are people who are going through this. It's not just Mandla. If you need help, we've often had Cassie on from SADAG, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, and they do good work. You can look up their number. Just give them a call. They were working through the holidays. We spoke to her just before Christmas, and she was telling us how much they're doing and how there's someone there at the end of the phone no matter what. So, you know, before you make any rash decisions, reach out and find one of those people whose instruments are working to help.
Absolutely.
To help you fly.
There's always hope. There's always hope.
Yeah. All right, Doc, thank you very much.
All right, guys.
Dr. Hanan, nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys.
We'll check in with you next week, Dr. Hanan Bushkin, and it's going to be okay. It really is. All right, so Leanne Bulelo and I are ready to take you into another hour in the next couple of minutes, so we're going to do Collectomania a little bit later as well, so stick around for that and a whole lot more. It's Monday on CliffCentral.com. Good Monday morning to you.
CliffCentral.com.